You're with RN Breakfast, on air and online.
Good morning, this is AM, I'm Michael Brissenden. A protest against the Prime Minister and the federal government's policies turned violent at Adelaide University last night. Some protesters broke through a fence around a building where Tony Abbott was giving a speech, and two were hurt. Outside, the protesters railed against the higher education changes in the budget. Inside, Mr. Abbott focused on foreign policy and terrorism. Carolyn Winter reports.
Anger boiled over outside Adelaide University last night, where the Prime Minister delivered the Sir John Downer oration. Several hundred protesters voiced their anger against the proposed higher education reforms, and things turned ugly after two were trampled by police horses. While unpopular budget reforms were the focus outside, inside the Prime Minister was looking beyond domestic policy and painting his government as one with vision.
From negotiating free trade agreements to Operation Sovereign Borders, to Operation Bring Them Home, and indeed to Operation Budget Repair, there has been a clarity of purpose to all this government has been trying to achieve.
He argued Australia is a nation not to be underestimated on a world scale, and that internationally it's being recognised for it.
We're big enough to be useful, but not so big that we're intimidating. Throughout our history, we've been an utterly dependable ally, a reliable trading partner, and a swift responder to people in need.
He outlined the country's positive foreign policy objectives: international stability, trade relations, global security, and building cultural relationships abroad and at home. There's been some tension between the government and Muslim leaders, who say its plans to beef up counter-terrorism measures are unjustified and target Muslims. Last night, Tony Abbott's message to the Australian Muslim community was that they are part of Team Australia.
Extremism is the enemy, not Islam. Terrorism is being targeted, not the members of any religion. Terrorists' tendency to justify themselves in religious terms could lead Muslims to rethink and re-articulate the real nature of their faith.
He spoke of a multicultural nation where the government is about stopping terrorist crime, not singling out religious communities.
Perhaps this will turn out to be the moment when Australians come to appreciate that the Muslims among us much more often have our perspectives than those of the protagonists in foreign wars. Perhaps this might turn out to be the time when Islam, like Christianity before it, finally dissociates religion from the use of force.
But while he may have been fostering goodwill and togetherness inside the lecture theatre, there was certainly no Team Australia outside.
Protesters outside Adelaide University last night, ending Carolyn Winter's report. In a stunning revelation, the opposition leader Bill Shorten has publicly identified himself as the central figure in an alleged rape case dating back to 1986. Mr. Shorten has been cleared after an investigation by Victoria Police. He described the allegation as untrue and abhorrent. Both sides of politics have welcomed his decision to go public at this stage, but what are the possible political ramifications? Tanya Plibersek is Labor's deputy leader, and she joins me now. Tanya Plibersek, welcome to AM.
Michael, how are you?
What do you make of the decision to go public? It certainly would have come as a shock to most Australians, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it would have surprised many people that Bill has outed himself as the person that the Australian reported several months ago there was an investigation about. But it is important, of course, when such serious allegations are made, that the police do thoroughly investigate those allegations. And having seen that process completed now, I think Bill thought it was time just to hopefully put a line under this.
How's it going to play out politically? Because Parliament's back next week. Do you expect it will divert debate at all?
Michael, I'm not a political commentator. I think that that's really a question for someone else. This has been a very serious allegation. Like any serious allegation, it should have been thoroughly investigated by the police. They have taken some months to investigate it. They've spoken also to the Office of the Public Prosecutor in Victoria to confirm that there is no case to answer here. I think that really does need to be the end.
Okay, I know he says that he wants that to be the end of it as well, but online is where this allegation first surfaced. Do you fear that this might be driven further by a non-mainstream media campaign?
Well, I don't think any of us can control what's said on the internet.
Clearly, there is a lot of chatter out there, isn't there, that will continue. I guess it's you have to find a way to deal with that somehow.
Well, Michael, I don't know. I don't read that sort of stuff. I think we'd all go mad if we read and believed everything that's on the internet.
Did he and the Labor Party need to clear the air on this at this stage? I mean, well before an election?
Well, no, Bill didn't need to address this at all. He was not named in the original report. He could have carried on without ever expressing the fact that this report was about him, but you can imagine that it's taken a significant toll on his family, and he thought now that the police investigation is concluded, it was a good time to say it was me. I'm not hiding behind spin doctors and so on. I put my hand up. It was about me. But the police have thoroughly investigated, as they should have, and they've found that there's no case to answer.
Do you expect the woman will continue with her claim?
I couldn't begin to speculate.
Okay. On other matters, the Prime Minister's been meeting with Muslim leaders this week trying to win their support for the planned changes to the terrorism laws. Would you urge the community to support those laws?
Look, I think it's very important that David Irvine, the head of ASIO, was out yesterday saying that these laws are not about targeting any particular community. They're about keeping Australians safe from potential acts of terrorism. We are very fortunate that we've been able to keep Australians safe, but we shouldn't ever be complacent about threats overseas. On the other hand, it's also very important. I mean, one of the reasons terrorists behave in the way they do, Michael, is because they want to strike fear in people's hearts. And we've been a free and functioning democracy. We can't change the way we behave as Australians to behaving in a fearful way because of terrorist events overseas. So we need to find a balance. There's a first lot of laws that the parliamentary committee that I'm on, the Intelligence and Security Committee, is examining at the moment. We're methodically examining those laws. The Prime Minister's announced recently that he wants to introduce a second tranche of laws, but we haven't seen any of the details of those, Michael. So we need to look at them, examine them methodically, and make sure that they do help our security agencies do their job, but they don't change our Australian way of life.
Do you agree with the Prime Minister when he says we need to remain vigilant and that these laws do that, and that if we don't, beheadings such as we've seen in Iraq could happen here in Australia at the hands of terrorists?
Well, I don't know which laws he's talking about because he's made an announcement that there'll be new laws, but he hasn't drafted them yet. So when those laws are drafted, Labor will examine them closely and see whether they do assist the national security agencies do their work. The national security agencies do very important work. We are very supportive of the work they do. We want them to keep Australians safe. But I have to say that we balance that against behaving fearfully. I don't want terrorists to change the way that I live as an Australian.
Okay, Tania Plibersek, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
You're listening to AM Around Australia, where it's 19 minutes past 7. Coming up, the United States considers all options to bring down Islamic State militants, including potential targets inside Syria. The hunt continues for the identity of a man who murdered US journalist James Foley. It's been reported the militant in a black mask is one of three British citizens who held James Foley and other foreign hostages for the group known as Islamic State. One report says hostages nicknamed them John, Paul and Ringo. There is increasing debate in the United Kingdom as to what can be done to address radicalisation of young Britons and whether the government has done enough. Europe correspondent Mary Guerin reports from London.
The first clues might lie in the voice.
We are an Islamic army and a state
that has been accepted by a large number of Muslims worldwide.
The chilling recording of James Foley's murder is being pored over by teams of security experts and police. The first task, to establish if the voice on the recording does belong to the killer, that the video hasn't been dubbed. If not, experts have pinned his vocal patterns to southeast England, probably London, most commonly heard in the East End. One such expert is Professor of Phonetics Jane Setter from the University of Reading.
If this speaker is from the UK, they're probably from the London area. This accent's also sometimes referred to as Jafaican. It has some features of Afro-Caribbean languages, and it's a language, it's an accent which seems to be replacing Cockney among younger speakers in London.
After last year's murder of a British soldier by extremists on a London street, a task force was set up to support Muslim groups tackling radicalisation. Sir Iqbal Sakrani, an advisor to the Muslim Council of Britain, has now criticised the government for cutting funding for this work.
There is a disconnect in terms of the mainstream Muslim organisations and the government. Somehow the government feels that they can connect directly to the community and get their messages. I'm afraid this has not really worked.
Colonel Bob Stewart is a former UN commander and now a Tory MP. He concedes Britain's security services don't know enough about the 400 to 500 estimated citizens fighting with extremists in the region.
Of course they don't. How can they do that with the number of people in the British security services? They can't. It's almost impossible. But let's be quite clear. They can actually check people when they come back and there's some suspicion about them. Perhaps we should say to them, you prove where you've been while you've been away from this country, and we'll consider letting you in. Otherwise, you're not coming in.
This isn't a new issue. Has the British government been doing enough over the past previous years if this has come to pass?
The answer is no. Of course it hasn't been enough. Governments never do enough when incidents like this occur, because actually the answer to the question is, if we'd done more, perhaps this wouldn't have happened.
The former head of counter-terrorism at MI6, Richard Barrett, says he believes there's a much better chance now than a few years ago that the murderer's own community in Britain will give up his identity to authorities.
I think that the relationship with these vulnerable communities is very much stronger. So long as they have confidence that by talking to the police, they won't bring down all sorts of additional problems to themselves, I think they're ready to do so. And I think increasingly they feel they should do so.
Despite the threat to kill a second hostage, the West is sending a message it won't be taking a backward step. US airstrikes in Iraq have resumed. This is Mary Guerin in London for AM.
The United States is considering all options to pursue Islamic State militants, including potential targets inside Syria. To date, the president has said America's military role is limited to protecting American assets and providing humanitarian assistance inside Iraq. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel says the momentum of Islamic State militants has stalled, but he expects them to regroup and everything is being explored. North America correspondent Michael Vincent reports.
The United States has already killed Islamic State militants inside Syria. In the past 24 hours, the US revealed it carried out a military operation inside Syria earlier in the northern summer to rescue hostages. Today, the US Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel confirmed James Foley was part of that rescue attempt.
We all regret that mission did not succeed, but I'm very proud of the US forces that participated in it. And the United States will not relent our efforts to bring our citizens home and their captors to justice.
But Chuck Hagel has been asked, does America plan to go back into Syria to carry out airstrikes against Islamic State targets there? He began his response to reporters at the Pentagon by saying the US is funding the moderate opposition in Syria, and then he gave this answer.
That's what we are looking at, that's what we are doing, and we will continue to stay focused, as I said, on what we are doing now and exploring all options as we go forward.
The options that you refer to include airstrikes across the border.
Like I said, we're looking at all options.
Alongside Chuck Hagel, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey. He says American fighter pilots and drones have already undertaken 89 airstrikes on Islamic State targets inside Iraq. He too was asked, why not across the border?
This is an organization that has an apocalyptic end of days strategic vision, and which will eventually have to be defeated. To your question, can they be defeated without addressing that part of their organization which resides in Syria? The answer is no. That will have to be addressed on both sides of what is essentially at this point a non-existent border.
As the president has repeated time and again over the past few weeks, the US mission is limited to force protection and humanitarian assistance. General Dempsey's pointed to the need for a regional military solution to destroy Islamic State.
And that will come when we have a coalition in the region that takes on the task of defeating ISIS over time. ISIS will only truly be defeated when it's rejected by the 20 million disenfranchised Sunni that happen to reside between Damascus and Baghdad. It requires the application of all of the tools of national power, diplomatic, economic, information, military.
But General Dempsey's made it clear he doesn't actually like the acronym the Obama administration uses, ISIL, to describe the organization. And his reason, he says, goes to the heart of this fight.
I actually call ISIL, here we go, right, ISIS, ISIS, because it's easier for me to remember that their long-term vision is the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham. And al-Sham includes Lebanon, the current state of Israel, Jordan, Iraq, Syria, and Kuwait. If they were to achieve that vision, it would fundamentally alter the face of the Middle East and create a security environment that would certainly threaten us in many ways.
As for the pursuit of those who killed James Foley, the U.S. Attorney General said today that the United States has a long memory, a very wide reach, and people will be held accountable one way or another. This is Michael Vincent in Washington for AM.
At the Royal Commission into Child Sex Abuse, Cardinal George Pell has defended the Catholic Archdiocese of Melbourne's controversial victims' compensation scheme known as the Melbourne Response. Giving evidence via video link from Rome, the Cardinal said the scheme he set up was an Australian first and victims were its first priority. Samantha Donovan reports.
Victims of clerical sexual abuse have told the Royal Commission the Melbourne response gave them inadequate compensation, took away their legal rights to sue, lacked compassion, and was intimidating. But the man who set up the scheme 18 years ago, Cardinal George Pell, gave evidence from Rome that the victims were his priority.
We were ahead of the curve. I'm not sure there was any other system in Australia, perhaps anywhere else. We were certainly no less generous.
Sean Cash, the barrister acting for abuse victim Paul Herzbach, didn't accept Cardinal Pell's claim that money wasn't his main concern when setting up the Melbourne response.
I suggest you're being disingenuous, Cardinal, when you say your primary objective was to help the victims.
Could I be allowed a chance to speak? My primary concern was not financial. Through the Melbourne response, that money could be provided to people who would have got nothing or very little through the courts.
In explaining his thinking on whether the Catholic Church should be liable to compensate victims, Cardinal Pell compared the church to an ordinary business.
If there is a series, for example, of trucks, if in fact the driver of such a truck picks up some lady and then molests her, I don't think it's appropriate, because it's contrary to the policy, for the leadership of that company to be held responsible. Similarly, with the church.
The Royal Commission Chairman, Peter McClellan, was sceptical of Cardinal Pell's truck company analogy.
When a priest gains access to a child with the parent's consent, the relationship between the priest and the child is quite different to that between the truck driver and the casual passenger, isn't it?
Yes, I would certainly concede that.
Justice McClellan asked Cardinal Pell if he was ever aware of any abuse allegations against priests in the Melbourne Archdiocese before he heard of them in the media or from police.
Any allegations that came to my knowledge were reported to the authorities, and I had no knowledge of any criminal behaviour that was not being dealt with.
Now, before you became Archbishop, had you ever observed any behaviour by a priest or religious which you believe may have indicated some sexual difficulty in the behaviour of that person?
No, I don't believe I have.
The Vatican has refused to provide the Royal Commission with all the documents it's requested. Cardinal Pell gave evidence he thought the Commission's request was unreasonable.
I thought the aims could be equally well achieved by asking specific questions about specific cases in a range of different circumstances. The Vatican, in following international convention, they will not provide the internal working documents of another sovereign state.
The Royal Commission hearings into the Melbourne response continue this morning.
Samantha Donovan reporting. And to finance, Wall Street has closed a third of 1% higher amid optimism that the US Federal Reserve will continue to support the American economy. Investors are now waiting on a speech by the Fed Chair Janet Yellen for more clues on when US interest rates might start rising. In New York, the Dow Jones has closed at 17,040 points and the dollar is buying 93.04 US cents. I'm Michael Brissenden and that's AM for today.